one of my favorite slang words is when someone calls someone like an idiot or a moron or just useless, they call them a bucket. They call them a legend, which means bucket. It literally translates to a bucket. The first time I heard someone say, oh, he's such a legend. All these things. I was like, what about him is a bucket?
It also means your hips as well.
Yeah, legend also means
depending
hip.
Depending on context.
The bucket of your
bucket in your body.
It's so weird because that word, when you literally translate it, and we learn the word bucket, and then you hear someone saying like, oh, that guy's such a bucket, you're like, what are you talking about?
Hey there, this is Steph from stephfuccio.com with another episode of Geopets Language. We are traveling to Thailand and Albania today to chat with an American couple who learned Albanian and other languages in the Peace Corps. I'll tell you more about them in a minute, but first I wanted to tell you about one new exciting development for the podcast. Geopets Language is part of the Geopets Podcast Network. There's a few different podcasts on there. I really wanted to play with some new technology that's coming out for live streaming. So, long story short, with this episode, we have a recorded version of this very conversation, unedited, over on the YouTube channel. It's under Geopets Podcast Network. It's the Geopets Language playlist. If you want to watch the unedited version of this or see Kyle and Diane and the hand gestures and things that they're doing throughout this language conversation, then do head over to YouTube to the Geopets Podcast Network. In today's conversation, I chat with Kyle and Diane, an American couple who lived in Albania not too long ago. Actually, they met in Albania during that time in the Peace Corps, but they'll tell you about that later themselves. They have since moved to Thailand, and I'm very jealous, and they're teaching there. But they still have a lot of stories to tell about their time learning and using Albanian language and other languages that they learned while they're here. During this chat, we talk about how they learned Albanian, what other languages were used in the regions of Albania that they lived in, cultural differences, especially that were connected to the language. We meet Albanian Kyle, and we learn a little bit about the history of the Albanian language. If you enjoy this or any of the Geopets Language episodes, I'd love to hear from you. Geopets Language is on Twitter, Instagram, and also my Gmail address. At stephfuccio.com, you can also leave a voice message. All of these links will be in the show notes for you. And if your podcast app does not display show notes, naughty on them, go to stephfuccio.com/Geopets Language. Let's travel a little bit, shall we, to Thailand and Albania.
Thank you so much, Kyle and Diane, for coming on Geopets Language.
Yay.
thanks for having us on here.
Oh, this is fun. We had a little bit of a glitch last time we tried to connect. Apparently, many of Google bits were down and we couldn't.
Yeah, the one day Google closed worldwide.
Right?
What were the odds of that?
That was a weird moment. I was like, I knew someday the internet would crash, and yet didn't think it would be this soon.
Sure enough, when we scheduled an interview.
But it rebounded, and so did we, and we are here. So what we usually do at the beginning of all the podcasts is we start out with Geopetness. So there are two of you, so you can probably do this individually if you wish. So Diane, let's start with you. So where have you spent a significant amount of time in the world before now?
All right. Well, I grew up in the U.S. my whole life. I actually have a pretty abnormal expat story because my parents still live in the same house that they did when I grew up. I've never moved ever in my American life until I went to the Peace Corps. And that was the first time I had ever even moved. Like, I went to university an hour away from my parents. I was very insular, very Americanized in that way. I had only been to like Mexico and Canada, very classic standard American, which is unfortunate, but it is a sort of true stereotype about Americans that we don't travel enough. And I was definitely living that. And then went to the Peace Corps and I decided after that, you know, to stay in Albania, lived there for 5 years and just moved to Bangkok. So just Albania and Thailand, very new to the expat life.
And can I ask what part of the U.S. you grew up?
Yeah, I'm from Plymouth, Massachusetts, which is like an hour away from Boston.
And Kyle?
So, yeah, my growing up was a little bit more complicated because I moved around a lot. So I've lived in North Carolina, Wisconsin, Connecticut, Texas, back to Connecticut. I moved to North Carolina. My parents now live in Ohio. I've never lived anywhere longer than 6 years. 6 years was it. And that was when I lived in Connecticut the second time. But then, yeah, after that, I haven't lived anywhere for longer than, or in one place for longer than 4 years. So I've just kind of been on the move. And then similar to Diane, after I finished university, joined the Peace Corps, went to Albania. I kind of knew from, I don't know, high school age, university age, that my trajectory in life was international, was finding a way out. And Peace Corps was the perfect avenue for that. So yeah, got out with Peace Corps. We stayed in Albania, worked at international school there, and now we're here in Bangkok.
Now, did you two meet and go do the Peace Corps together, or did you meet in the Peace Corps, if that's not too personal?
A commonly asked question. We met before. We did not know each other before.
Yeah.
We actually met in the Peace Corps.
Yes, we were the Peace Corps couple.
Aw, that's really sweet. And you were doing Peace Corps in Tirana or somewhere else?
No.
So we flew into Tirana, and then we went to Elbasan to do training for 2 months, but we were actually at host families outside of Elbasan in smaller villages. We were in two different host villages even. We weren't even in the same host village. So we would only see each other when we would come in for training into Elbasan. Then you get assigned for your two-year assignment all over the country. And Kyle got assigned in the mountains near Elbasan, and I got assigned on the coast. So we were very far away from each other.
Yeah.
Basically on two different planets, which is funny because Albania is so small, but yeah.
Okay, and did either of you study Albanian at all before you got there?
I did, like, casually with a friend just to be polite, because I was really afraid of leaving and not being able to be polite, but my pronunciation was not as good as I thought. But we were very blessed to have the Peace Corps give us some introductory lessons, although I think that's not what helped us the most, learning it. Like, I don't think that's how we learned the most.
I went in with zero, essentially nothing. I had read a little bit about the country, but as far as like language goes, there weren't a lot of resources online for Albanian language, which you may or may not know. So I think maybe one day back in like 2014, I looked up a video, like a YouTube video, just to hear what Albanian language sounded like. And I mean, there's
so much more now on YouTube than when we left. Because, like, it's so weird to think about the internet as a new thing. But, like, as you know, like, YouTube was just becoming a thing, a big thing in 2014. You know what I mean? It was very much on the rise. Platform had just changed. People started posting videos. YouTubers were becoming famous. Now it's, like, the normal way you watch TV, which is so crazy. So now, like, it's much more readily available then.
Yeah, I basically came in with nothing. And, like, Diane, it was, I don't know, interactions with locals. Yeah. What lessons we got from Peace Corps, which were a lot in the beginning, but then after that they drop off and there's nothing.
You both grew up with English, I imagine. Is that
yeah.
Okay. I like yeah, to check. Did you have any other languages at your disposal before Albanian?
No. I guess it's not fair for me to just say no, because I did take Spanish in high school. But when I say I lived like the regular suburban American life, I'm talking average America, like middle class America. You know, like I had Spanish class. I was okay at Spanish, but when I went to college, I forgot all of it because I didn't continue. So I was exposed to Spanish, to some Portuguese that was around us. Ironically, there's a huge Albanian population in Massachusetts, but I didn't
really
know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that when I was.
No idea.
And I had no idea. So I didn't know that the languages that were being spoken were so different and diverse. And now that I've lived abroad, when I go back, we hear it all the time, which is funny. I lived there my whole life and I had no idea.
She could have been practicing before she left.
I could have got a tutor. I had no idea.
Well, okay. Is there a reason why there's this Albanian population in that part of Massachusetts?
From what I understand, the first, and I could be wrong, but from what I've heard from Albanians as well, is the first Albanian immigrant to the U.S. went to Boston.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was, that. Yeah. That
and
was apparently
have,
the landing place of the first Albanian immigrant.
They have the first Albanian Orthodox church there as well.
Well, who knew? Well, you guys do, but.
Your language pre Peace Corps.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say like before, before P-Square, I was definitely exposed to a lot of other languages, but I was never like fluent or really more than, I don't know, basic conversational. And no, that's true.
German in college.
Yeah, but basic conversation, Dad. I'm not.
Okay.
Anyways, the point is, yeah, like growing up, I don't know. I remember as a kid, when I lived in Texas, that was when I was first exposed to Spanish because there are a lot of Spanish speakers there. And then as a kid, one of my neighbors, and when we moved it back to Connecticut, one of my neighbors and good friends spoke Spanish and German at home. And I remember hearing those languages a lot anytime I go over to his house. I had another friend who also spoke Spanish at home. So I remember, like, from a young age, exposed to languages, kind of like, oh, this would be neat. And I think I was in, yeah, I was in third grade. They offered like an after school Spanish class for some elementary school students who are interested in it. And I did it, but it was only like a 2 month thing. I learned like colors and how to count to 10 and those kind of things. And that's it. I dropped off. And then after that, I did Spanish in high school up until like, I don't know, maybe my junior year of high school. So only 3 years of Spanish. And then I took German in university. Go figure. I thought that would be different and interesting. And I never really used it. My Spanish, I did end up using more just because like I went on a trip in university to Peru and I got to use some Spanish there. I used it sometimes at like the little Mexican owned supermarkets or little markets in town where I'd buy groceries sometimes. So, but that's it. I wouldn't say I was never close to fluent and just pretty minimal, so basic modest conversation. Yeah, because I'm modest, but no, I'm being factual. Modest.
So for the folks who are watching this, who are like Albania, can we do a quick, my husband likes to do, like, he's from Idaho. So he likes to do like, this is the US, California's over here, New York's over here, Idaho's up here. He always does hand comparisons. All right. So if this is Albania.
Yeah. This is
Albania. Yeah. Okay.
No, so with the thumb and everything.
That's this right.
Really?
Sorry. Like this is Albania.
Oh, okay. That's, okay. That's, so where would Italy be on that in comparison?
Like, where
did
we live?
No, where would Italy be? I want to give people a reference to Albania as a whole, and then we'll go.
Italy's over here. Greece is my wrist. This is Greece.
Yep. This is down
this
there.
This is Italy.
That's.
This is Corfu.
That's Greece.
Corfu over here.
Okay, and now with that global reference, now where did you guys live? Because you said it was in very different parts of Albania, so can you show us?
So, there? I lived, like, here.
Okay, so the bottom, below the thumb. I lived in a town
called Mara, which is a small Greek minority town on the Riviera. It's very near and dear to my heart. They're some of my favorite people in the whole world, so it's like a home away from home for me. I still talk to a lot of them, even though we moved away. I keep in touch with a lot of my friends there, but yeah, I lived in Himara down here. Kyle, where did you live?
I was over here in the far east, like eastern central part of Albania.
Yeah, like here, probably.
Yeah, close to the North Macedonian border.
Is that up in the mountains?
I mean, no.
It's on the way.
It's accessible. Like, it is, like, it's at the base of mountains. It's surrounded by mountains.
If you wanted to drive to Lake Orid, you would have to pass the town.
It's called Libraj for people that are curious.
Yeah.
So it's a small town. Less than, I don't know, maybe like 7,000 people max.
Wow, that is small. Now, were you both teaching language or doing something different in the Peace Corps?
We were doing two totally different projects. I taught English. I taught with a co-teacher in a local high school. I went in and did my best. It was actually really challenging, but I did learn a lot from my co-teacher. And I had a really hard time, but a really good time. And the expectation is just different when you're a volunteer. It's kind of hard to figure out what your place is. But I did learn a lot. I also faced challenges because we were taught Albanian as the language of Albania. But I, like I said, lived in a Greek minority town. So even at the public high school, you would go in and you would teach in English, and then there would be the good kids who could speak, and they would translate to the kids in Greek or Albanian. And some of the kids only have spoken Greek for their whole life. Like, they don't really know, even though they learn Albanian in school, it's hard for them. So I faced that, where I had basically a trilingual classroom, which I had never done in my life. And, well, as I mentioned, I had only really been to Canada and Mexico, except I did a service trip in college to Uganda, So I did do that. I did leave the continent once before I moved off the continent, but I'd never even been to Europe, you know, like I was wildly prepared and unprepared for what I faced. It was really challenging. However, I learned a lot. I did a lot of tutoring outside of school and a lot of like English conversation stuff. I did a lot of translation. My best favorite project that I don't take any credit for at all because my friend really did all of it. He created a tourism website for the Riviera and he speaks like five languages, ridiculous, like one of my best friends. And he wrote everything in English and I just went through and edited it for him, like to make sure it made sense. But I tried to keep it like quirky and local still because, you know, you don't want to change everything. You want it to be authentic. But I spent a lot of time translating and we're actually doing an update, which is exciting. And, you know, we've got all this time in COVID now. We're doing an update of the website, which is a nice refresher on, that was like my favorite project, I think. But it was cool. Like it's the Peace Corps, when you think of it as an American, you think like you just do what you're told to volunteer to do. But really the projects you do outside, of course, what you go to volunteer to do is very important. And it was good and it was great. And I learned a lot and I hope they learned a lot. And it was a great exchange. But the more sustainable thing is the relationships you build and the time you spend in your community. So I had like a lot of good time doing language exchange and I spent a lot of time doing that kind of stuff, running an English club with some local girls and now they're in college, which is so weird. So yeah.
They've grown up.
So weird. I'm here if you
so choose to lose. I'm interrupting because we need to hop on over to Germany and then for a world trip. Let's have a listen to some things that I hope will help you with your own language learning journey. German Uncovered. You've heard me talk about German Uncovered course before, and I'm back talking about it because it is a fantastic course. I haven't finished it yet, in full disclosure. I think I stopped at about chapter 7 or 8 when we had to leave Germany due to visa issues, not due to anything nefarious. German Uncovered is a fantastic course. The whole point of this course is that it's story-based. You've got a 20-chapter story of these teenagers going to Germany to experience the language and the culture, and there is a bit of mystery and intrigue in the story as well. You've got everything online. You've got videos that talk about the cognates to help you transfer your knowledge of English over to German. You've got videos on grammar, vocabulary, oh, and so much more. And it's so easy to get motivated by the movement of the story itself, and it kind of, honestly, even just in 7 or 8 chapters, I felt myself getting pulled into the story and forgetting the grammar and doing things perfectly and just wanting to know what happens at the end of the story. German Uncovered is the name of the course. I'll have an affiliate link for you in the show notes as well as on stefffuccio.com/geopatslanguage. The second announcement is from Online Language Exchange and they're going to tell you all about it themselves.
Hi, everyone. Join us at the Online Language Exchange. We host events for language learners to practice and improve their target language with native speakers. The events are well-structured, fun, friendly, and great for conversational practice. You are placed in small groups of 2 to 6 people. You speak 10 minutes of your language, 10 minutes of your target language, then you move to a different group with new people. We usually have over 130 participants attending from all over the world, with languages including English, Spanish, French, German, Italian, Portuguese, Japanese, Arabic, Mandarin, Russian, Irish, and sometimes more, depending on who participates on the day. All levels are welcome to join. There is no admission fee, but participants can contribute if they wish. So if you're looking to practice your target language in real conversations with real people, join our online language learning community. The event takes place every Wednesday. For more information on time zones, how to connect, check out our Facebook and Insta pages at Online Language Exchange.
So hopefully these two tools will help you with your own language learning process. All right, let's get back to the Albanian language and other languages that intermingle with it within the country of Albania.
I guess to give a little bit of background of how it worked, like with our Peace Corps group, they only offered basically two sectors, as they refer to it. So there were the English teachers which is the cohort that Diane was a part of. And then I was a part of a cohort called Community Development, which is
community
very...
Organizational development.
Organizational development. I mean, it was this organization that... Anyways, the point is, yeah, so they're two very, very, very different yet overlapping kind of fields and sectors. So I got placed with an NGO in Libraj as my primary assignment, World Vision, which I think actually is pretty well known internationally.
Yeah, it's a pretty big organization.
It's actually a Christian NGO, which I thought was surprising. I had no idea they had a presence in Albania before I started with Peace Corps. Anyways, I was placed there, and my counterpart, the person who you're trusted to be with that coaches you along, was there for 2 months, and then she got sent to another office to work. So I had to find a new counterpart, so to speak, within that time. But like Diane said, you learned that, you know, you've got your primary project, but Peace Corps is much, much bigger scope than that, right? So it's really your involvement in the community. So while I was there, I did much more than just work with World Vision and their projects that they had. Also developed an after-school English club, did a lot of work with the local high schools doing like youth programming and activities, did like a water project where we applied for a grant and then used the funding to build a bathroom in a school that didn't have any running water. And yeah, tutoring was big, spent a lot of time tutoring. Working with people of all ages from like 5 to 65. Mm-hmm. And then as Diane mentioned too, like also just building relationships with people in the community, talking to people like every day, getting coffee, I feel like was my primary job.
Oh no, that's terrible. Let's dig into the language part then. I know my impressions of Albanian when I first got here, but I'm very curious what your first impressions of the language were. What did you think of the sounds or like the different stuff you were hearing and seeing? What were your impressions of the language at first?
For me, just because mine will be way faster than his.
Yeah.
For me, I, like I said, didn't speak a lot of languages. I did have friends from other cultures, but they all grew up in America, and the primary language you use is English. Like, I say this lovingly, but I was a little ignorant. So going into it, like, I didn't even know what they were saying, what the sounds meant. Like, they were talking about certain grammar forms that in English, they were like, you know, in English you have this. I was like, I don't know. I just say the words. Like, it was very challenging for me to figure out just, like, your first general impression, because I was just hearing strings of words. You know what I mean? I wasn't hearing, like, meaning. It was just, initially, it was just strings of words.
And it didn't sound like anything else you had been exposed to at that point. No. It's a very different sounding language, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, my first impression just upon hearing it, as we're talking about sound, it was definitely not like anything I had heard before. It's definitely not a romance language in any way, shape, or form. It's not Slavic sounding, although there are moments where it feels like it. Sounds like it could be kind of Slavic. Yeah. It's not. Still very different from Greek. Mm-hmm. Very, like, it's got those few, like, Turkish loan words here and there, and they're thrown in. But, you know, it really is kind of its own thing. And I don't know. I'm trying to go back to what my first impressions were of the language. I just remember thinking it's just different. It was different, unique. It sounded nice. It sounded kind of, I thought so.
I had the opposite impression. I thought it sounded very blunt.
I think it depends on who you talk to, but yeah. Or who is speaking, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I thought it had kind of nice, interesting kind of like melody to it. It's not, I don't know. It's hard to say. It's hard to put myself back into that mindset.
It's like almost 6 years ago now.
Over 6 years ago now, or close to 6 years ago.
For sure. Wow. Well, I'm still just over 2 months here, and this is so weird to say, but I grew up with Albanian around me, but I never learned to speak it. And yet when I got here, I just was hit over the head with, it sounds like Russian. And I know that's going to offend some people that I don't mean it to do, but the rough parts, I think, Diane, you were talking about it sounded kind of a little rough.
Blunt. Some of the language sounds very blunt and very brash, and you don't know what people are saying. That, like, even here, now that we moved to another country, when we don't know what someone's saying, it automatically sounds already a little more aggressive most of the time. Then on top of that, they do have like a straightforward kind of louder language. So I think to the American untrained ear, it comes off as like, what's a loud language I know?
I think the consonant clusters and things. I don't know. It just sounded so Russian to me. And I never thought of that as a kid, but I think as a kid, I didn't know what Russian sounded like. And as an adult, I've heard it. So it was just weird. It took me by surprise. You mentioned that using the language, I think, is what is more of how you learned it than the actual lessons that you had. Is that
100%?
Yeah, we had two very different journeys in that category, but that's mostly because I was in a Greek minority town for 2 years, whereas Kyle was in like an authentic Albanian town. Not that, I mean, parts of humor are there very, it's very political. They're going to be like, ooh, you know, how's it? Diane, and they're gonna all come at me for this, but you know, there is a Greek minority there, and their first language, their mother tongue, is, some of them is Greek, some of them it's Albanian. So I was never getting like pure, I was only getting pure Albanian from a few people, and then I was getting pure Greek from other people and a mix. So my first year, it was really hard for me to distinguish the words and understand when someone was saying an Albanian sentence to me but using certain words in Greek.
Oh my.
You know what I mean? Or if you're saying a sentence to me and use words in Albanian, I ended up getting someone who became one of my best friends. I somehow convinced him to tutor me in Greek. I don't really know how. And I was just like this poor, sad American girl. So I think he was like, I'll help you, you lost little lamb. And he helped me learn Greek, and that made it easier to differentiate. Also, my home family spoke only Albanian, so I started to be able to recognize the rhythm in the language, and just speaking and trying and being in situations where you try, and it's either you get this correct and you buy the things you want to buy, or you get it wrong and you get nothing, you know, like being in those do or die, so to speak, such a situations, whereas that's what helped me more. What about you?
For me, it was really just coming. So like my whole strategy towards learning languages or approaching languages, and Diane sees me do this all the time and goes crazy, is kind of like talking to myself in my own head before I say it. And I she'll see, like, I'll kind of get like lost or start to daydream or something for a minute. She'll be like, what the hell are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm just kind of doing my own thing.
And like rehearse, don't worry about me. Whereas I don't, I'm just like, is this water or am I asking for grapes? I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas Kyle practices.
So I'll do that until I'm confident, and then I'll just start speaking to people with what I know. And then if I've maxed out with what I know, then I just sit there and listen and try to absorb. And that's really how I learned. I just slowly built on my vocab started to slowly grow and expand over time. And once you know how to, like, if you can conjugate verbs in the present tense and in the simple past tense,
you can go a long
then
way.
That'll get you a lot of mileage. And then you start to figure out the different nuances of the language as you go along.
The listening, too, that's a really good point. Is like, my Greek was way better when I could listen to my close friends all speak to each other in Greek, because all their first language would be in Greek. And then sometimes they would speak Albanian or English for me. But when I was listening, they would be like, aren't you bored? And I'd be like, no, I think it's interesting.
Yeah.
Then when Kyle would come to visit my town, they speak in Greek, and I could tell him, I know what they're saying, but I can't say
she
it.
She couldn't reply.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
This is the type of thing I'm talking about, because my vocabulary was getting a lot better. Not perfect. My Greek is far worse than my Albanian, but I try.
And especially in the beginning, a lot of what I do is I just watch people's mouths when they speak. Now it's hard with COVID to do that, but
good point.
But pre-COVID days, I wouldn't look people in the eye. I'd just look at their mouths. I'd just watch how they were speaking and how they were forming, like what shapes they were making when they were speaking.
Putting the sound in motion did help a lot, actually.
Yeah, those are basically the strategies that work.
cultural generalizations. Could you make any cultural generalizations when you were first learning a language? Because now you probably know a lot, both culturally and linguistically. But at first, were there things you learned, like language bits that you learned that you were like, that's interesting, we don't do that in English? That's like a culture moment within language.
I think it's interesting that Albania has a verb form that will say, like, I am doing this verb to myself. I clean myself. I wash myself. Do you know what I mean? The reflexive verb. Whereas in English, verbs. Never say it that way. Reflexive verbs. In English, you would never say it that way. Like, I will take myself somewhere. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's very distinct certain ones, but it was always really interesting to me that they always, some of the verbs have a callback. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The way that they are reflexive verbs are really interesting. And I also found that, like, slang in Albanian is really interesting because, you know, in English, we have really stupid slang that, as well, or nonsensical slang that if you were an ESL learner, you would be like, wow, this doesn't really make sense. But I had never learned that from another perspective. So when I started to learn slang, it was weird because I was like, but this doesn't mean this. Like, one of my favorite slang words is when someone calls someone like an idiot or a moron or just like, useless. They call them a bucket.
Oh, say it in Albanian.
Legen. They call them a legen, which means bucket. It literally translates to a bucket. The first time I heard someone say, oh, he's such a legen. Ayash, a legen, ayash. All these things. I was like, what about him is a bucket?
It also means your hips as well.
Yeah, legen also means
depending
hip.
Depending on context.
The bucket of your
Body.
It's so weird because that word, when you literally translate it, and we learn the word bucket, and then you hear someone saying, like, oh, that guy's such a bucket. You're like, what are you talking about?
A bucket is useful, though.
In this case, no.
In this case, no. Dirty bucket. Big insult to call someone that.
Well, what's interesting for me about Albanian, and now this might be, I don't know, like, I feel like I've experienced this and asked other Albanians about this, too, that speak multiple languages. But I feel like just very basic and simple conversations in Albanian are more exciting for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't like, and I don't know how to, and I don't know how to like express it more than just saying that, you know, like just having just basic chit chat.
Yeah.
For some reason is more, it feels more intimate than in English.
There's also more involvement, more emotion to mundane things. What we would consider mundane, like no one likes the small talk in English, right? Like, how are you? I'm good. How's your family? They're good. And you just move on. But like in Albanian, it really does sound like more emotional, more like building on it.
They're really good at communicating. They're good at communicating in a sense that they're good at conversing with one another. I'll say like they're really good at getting to know people because they're
not afraid to ask.
Like the language is like it, and the way people talk is it's very curious. It's with a lot of questions. So you start out when you greet someone, you're asking them like five different ways of saying like, how are you? Or how'd you spend your day? Right.
How did you sleep? How'd you spend your day? How is it going? How are you?
Usually it builds to something. And then you start asking questions and questions and questions. And like,
it builds to, are you married? What's your salary? Do you have
the five questions? Yes.
Yeah. But like people aren't afraid to like ask some of those personal questions
who
up front.
For?
So they'll get like right to the bottom of a hot topic or a debate really fast.
Yeah.
And it makes the conversation really fun and engaging. Whereas I feel like in English or some other cultures, it's small talk. And you might have to know that person really well or feel kind of comfortable around them or like kind of gauge their personality to figure out how the conversation's going to go. Albanian, maybe a little bit less so. It's a little bit more like they cut to the chase. And I like that.
Yeah. Small talk in English ends. You know what I mean? It's the mundane thing you have to do. Small talk in Albania, I think you're right. It's much more like it feels like people actually care. Do you know what I mean? They're not just asking to ask. That's why they ask 500 different ways about the same thing.
Yeah.
And I do find myself using a lot more qualifiers when I speak to Americans, like saying, if you don't mind sharing, can I ask this? That kind of thing. Than I do literally anywhere else in the world. Because I've been outside the country during when it's gotten more touchy to ask things. And so
When you lived in Albania, I don't think I ever said, do you mind or would you mind? You know what I mean?
You just don't say, ask
like,
that.
Are you gonna, like, here's a thing, do you want this thing? You know what I mean? Like, It's very straightforward. I like that about them.
And yeah, and if it's someone that you know or trust really, you're not using a lot of niceties around them. Yeah, it's just to the point.
Yeah.
And it feels like if you did overstep in some way, they would just tell you and it'd be no big deal.
Yeah, exactly. You can, yeah.
Or it'd be a big deal or it'd be a small deal, but they definitely tell you.
Yeah. And a big deal is not a complete deal breaker, depending on what it is. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Is there anything like you would tell someone who was starting to learn Albanian about what might help? Not resources necessarily. Oh, Diane, you're already on it. Go ahead.
Find an old person. If you're a male, typically it's an older male. If you're a female, typically it's an older female. And do what they do. Sit with them, listen to them, let them talk at you. Even if you have no idea what they're saying. And I mean like your mom and dad's age or like grandma, grandpa age. Like one of the people I speak Albanian to most and did, especially my first 2 years when I was really language learning, was one of my colleagues who was a 65-year-old teacher, like waiting for retirement, nice guy, just like wanted to get coffee and hang out. And he didn't care if I didn't understand him or we could only get through a few sentences every day. You know what I mean? Like he didn't care at all. He was just happy to sit and have coffee and babble on about whatever. And old people also repeat a lot. I find that they're very, very patient. So they will be willing to repeat over and over again. Like my host dad and my host mom in the village outside Elbasan, when I didn't know like fork and spoon and bowl and those things, and they had to figure out how I was going to eat, they would literally hold it up and say it over and over again, like piroon, piroon, lube, lube. You know what I mean? And it felt kind of childish, but that really is how my vocabulary got better, is being around older people in Albania that don't know English, that are just going through their regular life. That's what I think is the best way.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
No, I agree. I mean, and one of the things too about learning Albanian that, I mean, can make it easy if you have the patience, if you have the time, if you're able to spend time in Albania, is just hang out with people. It's a very social culture, as I'm sure you've noted by the amount of coffee shops. That's just interior. All of Albania, there's coffee shops everywhere.
Even in the smallest town,
even the smallest town, nothing. There will be the coffee shop. So coffee too. So find that person, like Diane said, old person, whoever. Find that person who you want to go to coffee with, and that'll help you learn. All I did my first, I remember in Peace Corps, they tell you this too. They're like, you know, your first 2 months are going to be real slow. Take your time. Say yes to a lot of things. I said to coffee with so many strangers. Just walk up and down the block. I'd say hello to people. I'd greet people. And then eventually, like, some people would start inviting me to coffee. And then that's how it all happens, you know?
Yeah, definitely. That's another good point, Kyla. When an Albanian asks you to do something and it's safe and nice and, you know what I mean, you feel good about it, never do something you're wildly uncomfortable with. Obviously, like, you know, be smart. But when you are feeling good about it and you know it's going to be a good thing, like a coffee or even going over for a dinner. They're so hospitable and nice. Like just say yes and go. And even if you're like, I won't understand a word they say, it does not
matter. Yeah. It takes a long time to learn, especially if
a lot of patience.
We, like Diane said, we were lucky. We had the Peace Corps and they gave it, we had that 2 month language program, which is a nice base. Mm-hmm. But then after that, it's what you do with it. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, you could, because after that 2 months, you could forget it all and not use it.
We had people in our group who just didn't need to use it in the communities they were in. Like, they found people that they worked with who spoke good English, or they had people in their friend group who were younger, and they were in areas where they had younger populations, whereas Kyle and I were in places where that wasn't as common. I did have a few people who spoke English in my town, and Kyle had, like, one or two.
We had a few
for each, but primarily our day was hearing and engaging in other languages. And I think that is really what made it better. Like it's very hard to learn in Toronto when everyone wants to speak English with you.
Integration was key, and just being around the language.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Diane said, I think because we moved to Toronto after we finished Peace Corps, and people, when they find out that you're not a native Albanian, Ukrainian speaker get excited and want to practice English. So I feel like we spoke a lot more English there also because we're teaching at an international school.
Right.
But it's much easier to speak Albanian outside of Tirana, in my experience. Granted, if you've already got that base, then Tirana's fine. You'll be speaking Albanian all the time. But if you're trying to learn, I recommend going to a smaller town. Somewhere where is a smaller amount of English speakers.
Find someone old, hang with them, see if you can go farm in their farm or something.
And just
have a lot of coffee. That sounds like a good plan. Such a good plan. How long do you feel it took you to feel confident in using the language? And I'm not talking about perfect grammar and all that kind of stuff. I'm just talking about being able to maneuver it to convey the meaning or the questions or whatever.
It depends on, I think that's a hard question only because for us, it depends on the stage of life. Like within a few months, I was comfortable getting on a bus, knowing where I was going, asking for the price, basic, those things, you know what I mean? Like I was comfortable doing those type of things, but I wouldn't say that I was comfortable in talking about the things I wanted to talk about with people until like, I don't know, 8 or 9 months into Peace Corps, maybe 10. That's when in Albanian I could talk about politics or religion or ask questions or have like bigger conversations. And even if I didn't know a word, like I could get around it enough that they could tell me what the word was. Like that's when I really feel like I was confident, when I didn't know how to say a word and I could say, hey, it's like this thing and I don't know how to say it, but it's like this. And one of my Albanian friends could be like, oh, it's this. You know what I mean? Like I think it took me maybe 10 months.
Yeah.
Maybe a year. Something like that.
I'd say with just the amount of exposure we had to the language, especially the first 3 months we were there, I'd say by the time I was done with the language training, I was able to have like basic conversation with people. I could order food, a coffee, could talk to people. By the time I got to my assignment, my post in Les Brages, at the NGO, I spoke to everyone in my office in Albanian, granted full of grammatical errors and whatnot, but that's how I communicated. Because my counterpart, the one that was there only for 2 months and then left, my replacement counterpart spoke no English.
It's a lot of trial and error.
And the people in my office, there were a few that spoke English, but felt more comfortable speaking Albanian to me. And that was perfect for me because I wanted to speak Albanian selfishly. I didn't want to speak English. I wanted to speak as little English as I could. So yeah, I'd say within a couple months, I was able to have like pretty basic conversation. It took a while to get to the point where I could just casually listen into a conversation, understand contextually what's going on. I think that took at least a year. And then after that year, like you start building.
Our first year was.
You start building really fast.
The first year is the big build. Like that's when you start to get confident in what I'm hearing is correct, that I understand it the right way. I can ask a question or I can do this. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like I'd say, yeah, probably a year for us to be like confident in no matter what the situation is, we can say something.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm not feeling that way right now about Thai.
No. We've also got a very different script.
Yeah, can't read it.
No, we've got. I got here in that category. I feel like, I don't know. Just given our circumstances with COVID and everything.
Yeah, COVID's a big hindrance on it as well. But we'll get there.
We're
shooting for the 2 year mark.
We'll get there. We're also in Bangkok, too, much more international city. Yeah. So it's.
We'll get there.
We have to dedicate ourselves a little bit more. To the language.
We dial back our expectations too, because I think we're both very driven to learn, and we're very driven to like we want to we're so passionate about learning Albanian and using it, and me learning Greek and trying to use it successfully, and you know that meant so much to us that when we moved here we were like we're going to do it, and we're still working on it. There are things we can say now that
we've got our taxi
tied
down. I couldn't
say a few months ago, but we'll see. I think it's going to be the 2 year mark.
It'll take longer.
Maybe three. Who knows?
Just because I mean it. In a way, like with Peace Corps, it was kind of like our full-time job to learn the language.
That's true. Yeah. And with a less exposure to people, and you're in the big city in Bangkok. And so there's a lot of factors stinging against you. Once you can go to a smaller place. Yeah.
And yeah, with the masks on, I can't read the lips.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, the script, the tones, and just, oh my gosh. Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
There is a lot.
But with Albanian, like if you were to compare how you feel, and I'm playing with this question, I'm not sure if I'm going to ask this a lot going on, but I'm very curious if you feel different when you're speaking Albanian than when you speak English.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
We describe it best as, in English, I'm the confident, talkative one. I'm the one who's talkative and confident and sociable and like outspoken and argumentative. Debate
or type oriented. A.
Type A. When we're in Albanian, he is, he's that.
I'm kind of a different character almost.
Yeah. We call him Albanian Kyle.
Yeah.
And our friends who watch this will laugh because our close friends, we all call him Albanian Kyle.
It's almost like what personality really is or something.
Wow.
I mean, I change too. I get more soft-spoken. I get those things.
I don't.
Albanian Kyle.
I mean, I'm still me. I'm still the same me. It's just, I think I'm a little more, I become a little bit more excitable and expressive.
You're just more outgoing.
Yeah.
That's what it is. You become an extrovert. Because in English, he's much more introverted. But in Albanian, he's like the extrovert. And I think it comes from his first few months there, not to be and psychoanalyze you, but I think it comes from his first few months there when he said yes to everything. He got so exposed socially
in
those social conversations. So it's so much easier for him in Albanian. And also, like,
it's the social culture and social language too.
In the villages for young men, it's a very social culture.
Yeah.
Whereas in the village, I'm not saying all of Albania, but in the villages, it is a little more conservative for women. So it's not like I was out getting coffee every single day in the same way that Kyle was. I had my own group of people and my own things too. And I had an ex Peace Corps volunteer that lived in my town. So I had people to be with, but it was in a different way socially. So I think that made me more of like a listener in Albania.
That's true.
But yeah, we're two very different people.
Wow. So you almost switch extrovert and introvertness.
Switch roles a little bit in
hashtag in Albanian Kyle.
Yeah. That's wild.
Albanian Kyle's fun.
Albanian Kyle is a trip. If we get to come visit next year or whenever, when you're still there, you hopefully will get to meet Albanian Kyle.
If Kyle switched over to Albanian, like just saying a few sentences now, would it be apparent or would it have to be during a full conversation?
I'd have to get into
Diane's disagreeing with you, Kyle. I'm sorry.
But
if you start on a topic, Kyle, you'll get there. If you start saying anything, if you started saying like, I'm good and this is my life here and I live in Bangkok now, it could be about anything. He just gets so loud and his hands are everywhere and Albanian Kyle.
So what do you want me to say?
Oh, okay. So the next natural question is, hey, could you like tell us something about yourself in Albanian so we can see this transformation? But that might be an uncomfortable thing to do. So
Oh
my God, it's completely apparent.
This is the most parrot he's ever been.
I'm 100% de gustire. I'm person që ka qëtë flas me gjithë, s'kam tur fare. Kurse kur flas anglisht, jam pak më mbyllur, jam më qetë, jam I sinqert.
Edhe ka fitura, edhe ka gjitha, ka sut, gjitha, ka goja.
The eyebrows, the glow, you glowed. You glowed when you did that. You changed.
He really does change.
I have no idea what you said, Kyle. No idea.
He's seriously another person. And it's funny, too, because when people listen to this podcast, his accent sounds Albanian. Mine does not. I sound like an American trying real hard to speak Albanian. He sounds like a nice Albanian boy who grew up abroad.
Sometimes I get that.
Yeah. Sometimes he gets villagey. Sometimes he gets Kosovar. But pretty much everyone believes it. They buy into him. And they're like, hey, American lady, you sound all right.
Kyle, thank you for doing that. And I'm not making fun of you. I have utter respect for what you just did. And the fact that you can be that animated in another language. It's amazing. It's amazing to me. I think that's fantastic. But yeah, literally everything. You'll see when the video goes up, everything about you changed facially.
It really does. It's fantastic. Albanian kind of. And for me, it's like I said, I'm more soft-spoken in Albanian. So like, if we were in a conversation, I would add in like a sentence and be like, I know stuff too. Or like, I'll talk one-on-one with people, but in a big group, it's harder.
To be fair, Diane, should we ask you to tell us something about yourself too, so we can see this?
Uncam pak turp, sipse shipintim, nafak ash maket sheishte, sipse ishte mir, Grecian shibri, the taninukiam, and the prandaya shati vestir from why the jua shuma booker, for shum shumi vestir from why the thex. Come American, come taxi American, normal, no come munsi, boy taxi shitar. Sure, poor, come shum respect for nears and the shibri, and the mermali shum.
You channeled my grandma just a little bit there. That was freaky. Yeah. Like, oh my gosh, you even brought out the hand and everything.
Like I said, old people. I hung out with people in their 30s as well, but I did spend a significant amount of time with old people.
Oh, wait. I'm completely and utterly bypassing something the listeners will probably want to know. Can you guys share what you talked about while you were doing that?
I said that I'm a little embarrassed because my Albanian used to be much better when I lived in Albania when I was using it. And now that I live away, it's not as good. And I can't do an Albanian accent. So I know I sound American, but you know, I am American and you know, I would love to do an Albanian accent, but it's just really difficult. And it's a beautiful language and I have a lot of respect for it, but it's hard for me.
I said, I don't really know what to say. I'm kind of modest. When I speak Albanian, I'm okay with speaking to everybody. In English, I'm a little bit more reserved and a little more closed. In both, I'm sincere. And then I kind of trailed off. And then,
blah, 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 etc.
Yeah.
Thank you both for sharing that. That was fun. That was a lot of fun. Are there any things you still are curious about the Albanian language that you ask people and you feel like you don't really get a reply that's satisfying?
Oh God, that's a big question. Can we focus on that a little more? Because I feel like
for me,
yeah, I'd have to think about that.
For me, like the different dialects, right? So there's Albanian that Kosovar speak. There's Geg. There's Tosk. You know, there's all these other dialects. There's what we affectionately call Shiplish, which is either the people who live abroad or the expats who speak Albanian and English. Shiplish. You know, we have a lot of that. And I just think it's so interesting that whenever we met someone from Kosovo, or especially when I was in Himara, there were a lot of tourists. So even people from the north who spoke Geg, or people who even sounded a little bit more northern or used northern slang, or people who were from Kosovo, they could always understand what we were saying. You know what I mean? In standard Albanian. But it was so hard to understand what they were saying. And yet I have Albanian friends who go to Kosovo and they're like, I know what's going on. And I'm like, it's sometimes, obviously, yes, in general, I could understand when we visited Kosovo what was being said or food at a restaurant, just some of the vocabulary changes. But it really impresses me, and I'll never understand how the dialects could be so diverse. Someone once tried to compare it to the U.S., who was in our Peace Corps group, and they tried to compare it to the U.S. and say it's like, oh, Southern drawl and Texas English and versus like Cali speak versus like the Boston accent. I used to have a little bit more of a Boston accent. I speak like standard American English now, but I think that comparison pales into how different the dialects really are.
They're very localized
because you go and some words, if you say it in Tosk, like people in Geg are like, no, we don't say that. We say this, you know, it's very interesting to me how that all functions in one relatively, it's a large diaspora, but relatively small area in Albania, and all these other parts have their own thing, but yet everyone somehow just knows that's their own thing. You know what I mean? I always found that weird.
Oh yeah, like how everyone, like how a lot of people know the particular sayings of each region.
Like how to say fasule and when to say grosh and how to say, you know what I mean? Like those small things, or when to say, I can't remember the northern word for watermelon now. There's a northern word for a watermelon that I can't remember now.
Shabchi is what I said.
And then there's a different word in the south for watermelon, which is so, it's like, and then there's boston, which is melon, which some people just use for all melons.
Kiefer.
You know, and then there's kiefer, which is just one kind of melon, but some regions just say this is a melon, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's just because it's not as well documented as some other languages that there's vocabulary that just like gets wishy-washy around, you know?
I was just going to say, it's Albanian as a whole is a really fascinating language, especially, I mean, when you're here, people are very proud to tell you that despite like Ottoman occupation, despite not being able to speak the language in their own country for 500 years, the language has survived, it has prevailed, and it's, and like the first written accounts of Albanian are in completely different alphabets. They didn't have their own standardized alphabets until recently. So to me, all that stuff is very interesting, like the history and the development of the language and now the modernization of the language.
And how important it is to people.
Yeah.
It's crazy how, and this is all kind of all over the Balkans too, language is such an important part of culture there.
It's the unifier, it feels like.
Yeah, that people really care. Like in Himara, the Greek speakers, the ones who are ethnically Greek, they love that their first language is Greek. They are proud to be ethnically Greek. And they have some dialectal words that they only really use in that region. And they're so proud of it, just the same as the Albanian speakers who are there in the same town, tiny little town. The Albanian speakers who are there are so proud that their first language is Albanian, and they have this unifying glue of this language. It's very, very interesting. Albanians are very proud people.
That's also what I loved about being in Albania. And knowing the language, too, gives you more access, I feel like, to hearing people's personal accounts with history, family histories, and all that. Yeah, we could do an entire podcast about that alone, I feel like.
Oh, I'm sure. Wow. Well, you guys are in Thailand now. Are you going to be there for a while? Because it sounds like you want to come back here.
Well, part of us does. A part of us will always find some fondness in Albania.
I'll always love the Balkans.
I will always, will always love the Balkans. It's definitely not something we're ruling out, but I do have a work contract. We do have jobs here. So, you know, like I have to wait. I can't really make any decisions until
we'll be here
the
for
end
a
of
little.
That contract.
We'll be here for a little while.
So, or not the end if we want to resign, you know? So it depends on a lot of moving parts, but definitely the Balkans will always be like a home for us. And it's definitely a place we're going to visit repeatedly in our lives. And we sometimes play around with the idea of after a few steps down the road, like would we go back or what would that look like? And it's definitely not off the table. I wouldn't say it's like the first thing on the front burner, but it's not off the table.
This is also like, I mean, Albania for both of us was the first country we lived in outside of the U.S. We developed a lot of personal connection there with the culture, the people, language, all that. So it is and always will be very near and dear to our heart.
Especially the people.
So we'll, like Diane said, we'll always be back. When? We don't know. That's the question mark. Yeah.
I mean, especially the people. The people. Thank God for the internet because.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be a lot harder to say, we don't know if we couldn't still keep in touch with a lot of our friends there, both expat and local. You know, we feel very close to a lot of people there. So
yeah, if the listeners are curious about learning more about you, is there any place online on any of the socials that you'd like to share with them?
Absolutely.
Giants.
They come anytime to my Instagram.
Yeah, it's like, follow my Instagram.
Yes. Kyle doesn't really do social media. He's one of those people who has social media so his mom knows he's alive. But really, so he can follow other people. So, like, I tag him and stuff so his family can see, in fact, Kyle and Diane are alive.
Yeah, I'm not really.
I love Instagram. I'm huge. Yeah. I think Instagram's the best social media. It's because I used to be into Twitter, and now I got rid of it because I'm all about Instagram. My handle is @lifeofdai, but between, like, it's like life. _of_die.
Okay. I'll have that in the show notes, but wow, that's difficult.
Yeah. It's not that hard.
It's easier than it sounds.
Yeah, it's way easier than, when you say it out loud, it sounds weird, but if you see it.
It's written it life of die.
Just with underscores in between. That's
with
it.
Two underscores in between. Okay. Well, it'll be in the show notes for folks.
So anyway, it's great. Life of die. I like to document what we do, what we can do. It's been a little weird with COVID.
Yeah.
I document some of I kind of talk about being an international teacher a little bit, what I can, because, you know, a lot of the schools have confidentiality stuff. So I try to talk about what I can and post about what I can. But we're also posting a lot about traveling, and we just stayed in an awesome place run by an NGO. Like, we're trying to highlight those experiences. So, and we did a lot in Albania as well. So my feed, you can look through it, and there's tons of posts about Albania, about restaurants, about Tirana, about a ton about Himara, the best place in Albania. Just saying.
No bias there, huh?
We have a lot of fun as well. We had our engagement party there. We've had a lot of good memories there. So a lot of highlights from Albania as well. And the Balkans in general, we travel a lot.
pretty much every Balkan country, for me, every Balkan country except Bosnia and Slovenia.
I'm saying Bosnia and Romania.
Yeah, majority.
Yeah, wow, fantastic. Well, I'm following you now and these pictures. Yay. Oh my goodness. I'm trying to stay focused for the closing of the podcast, but now I've got these cool pictures. This is difficult. I'm closing it down.
You know, follow along. And like I said, I really try to focus on sensible travel blogging. Obviously, we still stay at resorts sometimes. You know what I mean? We're still people. But we do try to do like ethical tourism and homestays, and we try to volunteer. We try to do those things still. So we'll see if we can keep that up. Hopefully COVID's made it a little difficult, but we'll see.
Thank you so much to Kyle and Diane for persevering through all of the technical difficulties that we had setting up this interview. We quickly talked about it in this conversation, how Google went down the first time we were supposed to chat, and it literally went down. I know those of you who are in the US, you only felt, I think, a couple of hours of that. But those of us in Europe and for them in Asia, we felt a huge part of our entire day that day that Google went down a few months ago. We felt the entire thing. The entire day just kind of fell apart. You really do realize when stuff like that happens, how much we rely on the internet for literally everything. So I'm really glad we were able to reconvene at a later date and have this conversation. Kyle and Diane are lovely, lovely human beings, and I'm so glad that I connected with them. And I hope that I'm still in Albania when they come back to visit, whenever that can happen in this interesting world that we're currently living in. Thank you also to Kirsten Cable for the German Uncovered information. This is through an affiliate program. I was / am / probably will be a future student finishing out that course as soon as my geographical life gets a little bit more sorted out. And to Online Language Exchange for the information about their exciting event that you heard about earlier in the episode. And finally, the music in this episode is from the wonderful Damon Castillo at DamonCastillo.com. The song you've been hearing is from the Mess of Me album. It's called Body Blues. And you're going to hear the complete song in 3, 2, 1.
Ain't it sad that you've never seen just how beautiful life can be? In fact, if I had to make a call, I'd say you never seen yourself at all. Just a flaw here and a flaw there when you're standing in your underwear. Girl, you don't have to buy anything. Confidence has always been free. But I can see you alone in a room, wearing nothing but some sweet perfume. That's why I'm here if you so choose to lose your body blues. Well, you're so hot and you don't even know it. Girl, I love what you got. Gonna teach you to show it. Shackles of the bourgeoisie. And as a working man, I have to propose. You leave the prison of your pretty clothes. That's why I'm here if you so choose to lose your body blooms. Day blue.
fear, there's no fear, 'cause I'm